Garrett calls the education finance. Was that a little aggressive?
Yeah, very good. Here we go.
Wake up, everyone. We're ready to roll. So, Garrett calls education finance committee to order for Tuesday, March 3rd, 2016, or 2026. We just lost 10 years. The committee legislative assistant will note the roll. A quorum is present. Representative Bennett, have you had a chance to review the minutes for Thursday, February 26, 2026?
I'm looking at them right now, Mr. Chair, and I move the minutes.
Rep. Bennett moves approval of the minutes for Tuesday, Thursday, February 26, 2026. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Minutes for Thursday, February 26, 2026 has been approved. We're going to move into our agenda for the day. Members, today we have two different presentations and discussions on the agenda. The first presentation will be from the Department of Education. Good to see you, Commissioner. While the agency gets set and their presentation ready, I want to point members to materials in the committee folder provided by the department and materials provided by our staff. I want to say thank you to Solveig, a special thank you to our nonpartisan fiscal staff, Solveig Beckel, for preparing several of the inserts for today's hearing. Members, today we are going to take a closer look at how the Department of Education is funded and how the department allocates those funds internally. For the department and for our members, it is a little after 1 o'clock. It is my intention to conclude this discussion and the presentation portion by about 2 p.m. So if we can plan accordingly there. Then we will proceed to our next presentation, which is around the Perpich Center. So before I turn it over to MDE, I would ask our fiscal analyst to briefly describe the materials related to MDE in your folder. So I'll turn it over to Ms. Beckel. Thank you, Ms. Beckel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Solveig Beckel, House Fiscal. There's a number of documents in your folders. One of them is titled Acronyms for MDE Administrative Funding Lists. This just provides a list of acronyms to help you understand the spreadsheets that are labeled federal funds to MDE attributed to agency operations, and the other spreadsheet labeled MDE Non-General Fund, Non-Federal Fund Administrative Funds. The other spreadsheet that I will briefly discuss today is labeled in the upper left-hand corner, House K through 12 Education Finance 2026 MDE Administrative Funding. So, going back to the one entitled Federal Funds to MDE Attributed to Agency Operations, this one and the other one that looks similar to it, I got this data from the Statewide Integrated Financial Tools System, or SWIFT system, using their EPM data warehouse. So I was able to get this data filtering for agency codes that looked to me like they were administrative funding. So there is, this is not an exact science, this is me trying to filter for what looked to me like administrative funding. And so this one is all from the federal fund. And like I said, if you need help sort of interpreting some of these items, please look at the acronym list provided. For fiscal years 25 and fiscal years 26, so the previous closed fiscal year and the current fiscal year that we are in, I have provided both non-payroll admin in one column and payroll admin, and then I have the total admin that I was able to determine. If you look at the final lines for 25 and 26, the payroll admins total to about $33 million and $36 million. Later, looking at a different spreadsheet, you'll see that the payroll coming from the federal funds for fiscal year 2026 is closer to $24 million. So clearly, I've gotten something a bit off there. But just wanted to flag that. Moving on to the spreadsheet MDE, non-general fund, non-federal fund administrative funds. So these include the miscellaneous special revenue fund and the other miscellaneous special revenue fund, as well as the gift fund and the miscellaneous agency fund. These are all funds that are internal to the state of Minnesota, unlike the federal fund, but also have administrative funding for MDE. And again, please refer to the acronym list for help interpreting. The next spreadsheet is the one that has the general fund spending. This one looks more like the fiscal tracker spreadsheet that some of you may be used to looking at. But instead of showing the entire funding for the program, as you are used to seeing, I've tried to show the dollar amount of the administrative funding set aside in the columns where you'd normally see the funding. So this shows fiscal years 24 through 29. In columns A and B, I show the percent or dollar cap for the administrative funding in A for fiscal years 24 and 25, and then in B for fiscal years 26 through 29. Occasionally, there's a few differences in fiscal years 28 and 29 from fiscal years 26 and 27, but for the most part, 26 through 29 are pretty much the same. And so if you have any questions on this spreadsheet, please feel free to ask those questions. I'm happy to respond. I did also compile a spreadsheet entitled Estimated MDE Staff Salaries Fiscal Year 2026. This is also pulled from the Statewide Integrated Financial Tools System. And this one just seeks to show the position number at MDE. So this is a position versus an employee. So this would also include currently vacant positions and the amount of funding attributed to it without knowing the specific employee and whether they receive that funding from federal funding, general fund funding, the gift fund, other miscellaneous special revenue fund, the restricted miscellaneous special revenue fund, and then the grand total of what their salary would be. So this does not include benefits. It's just the salary amount. And as I referenced earlier, if you look at the last page of this document, page 30, the federal funding for salaries is about $24 million. So didn't quite get it quite right with the federal funding for payroll. And Mr. Chair, those are the spreadsheets.
Thank you, Ms. Bechtel. Amazing work as always. Thank you to our nonpartisan staff. So just before we dive into the department, many of us who work on the front lines of schools are seeing the impacts of living in the real world with the budget reality and the budgetary challenges that schools are facing on a daily basis. In the previous budget agreement, the governor demanded and secured $430 million in cuts to state education spending, which includes $250 million in cuts to special education. And for those of us that have been in communication with our schools, the Blue Ribbon Commission is a hot topic of conversation. I know Chair Carisha is looking closer at the special education including the preliminary work of this Blue Ribbon Commission, and we have a hearing scheduled for later in session on this. Today, however, we put in context the funding increases provided to MDE, which may be useful as we consider funding priorities later on in session. After MDE has concluded their presentation, we will have time for member discussion. So members, we will be taking discussion and questions after. I will remind the testifiers to state your name for the record and proceed. And with that, I will turn it over to the department. Thank you for being here, Commissioner.
Co-chairs Bakeberg and Joachim, and members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Willie Jett, and I'm honored to serve as Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Education. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. I'm joined by members of our senior leadership team, who are public servants with expertise across finance, academics, operations, compliance, and student support. Our shared focus is simple, supporting Minnesota schools so they can support Minnesota students. MDE exists to help ensure every child, regardless of background or geography, has access to high-quality education. That commitment is foundational to our state. Education is the backbone of Minnesota's future workforce, civic life, and communities. The decisions we make today shape our students and who they will become tomorrow. Our role is to faithfully implement the laws you pass, steward public funds responsibly, provide clear guidance, and support districts across urban, suburban, and rural communities. We are committed to transparency, accountability, and partnership. Today, we will provide an overview of our structure, budget, and core functions, and how this work ultimately supports students in classrooms across Minnesota. MDE serves more than 873,000 pre-K through 12 students across 2,264 schools. We support a statewide workforce of over 56,000 students, along with administrators and support staff. Our work spans early learning through high school graduation and includes basic education, school libraries, and other programs that strengthen communities statewide. Together, this represents a comprehensive public education system, preparing students for their futures and sustaining Minnesota's workforce. This slide reflects the scale and diversity of Minnesota's students, including students receiving special education services, multilingual learners, students experiencing homelessness, and students qualifying for free or reduced price meals. These are not just categories. They are children with strengths and needs. Our responsibility is to ensure systems are responsive to them. Minnesota's student population is increasingly diverse. That diversity is a strength, and it calls on us to ensure opportunity and outcomes that are strong across all student groups. This slide provides a high-level overview of our fiscal year 26 budget, totaling approximately $14.1 billion. The vast majority is direct aid that flows to school districts and charter schools to support classroom instruction, special education, transportation, nutrition, and core operations. Grant funds support targeted state and federal initiatives designed to address specific needs and legislative priorities. While most funding is state-generated, federal dollars play a critical role, particularly in special education, title programs, and nutrition services. Our responsibility is to distribute these funds accurately, transparently, and in compliance with statute. MDE exists to serve students by supporting the adults and systems that make learning possible. Our role is leadership, partnership, oversight, and stewardship on behalf of our state. We work with districts, charter schools, educators, families, and community partners to implement legislative policy and investment. Every policy and formula and accountability system ultimately connects back to classrooms and to students. With that framing, I'll briefly outline the department's core areas of service. Our primary functions include supporting districts in implementing state and federal law, providing curriculum guidance, assessment frameworks, and technical assistance, offering professional development to educators and leaders, distributing and overseeing state and federal aid and grants, collecting and analyzing data to inform accountability and improvement, ensuring compliance with state and federal requirements, and supporting libraries and expanded learning opportunities. So at every level, our work is about creating stable, effective systems so educators can focus on teaching and students can focus on learning. So today you're going to hear from our Deputy Commissioner, Maren Holden, Assistant Commissioners Dr. Makari Trainum, Darren Cordy, Bobby Burnham, Angela Mansfield, and our Chief Operating Officer, Patty Hand. And with that, I'll turn it over to Deputy Holden.
Thank you, Commissioner. And good afternoon, co-chairs and members. My name is Maren Holden, and I serve as Deputy Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Education. I'm going to provide a brief overview of our organization and highlight a few key offices that provide important leadership in different areas for MDE. This slide shows you MDE's organizational chart, and I realize it is a bit small, so I hope that you have it in your materials and can see it up close. It's also available on our website with a PDF that you can zoom in on. This shows you the organization of our leadership team and division leadership within the various offices. With our team here today, we'll provide an overview of each of the following offices. I'll start with the first few and then turn it over to our assistant commissioners and our COO to share more. First, MDE's Office of American Indian Education works to strengthen and promote positive experiences and educational outcomes for American Indian students statewide. Our vision for this work is that American Indian students will reach their full potential within their school communities through meaningful, equitable, and targeted educational experiences that affirms their values and values their unique cultural identities. This office has six staff who serve the approximately 31,000 American Indian students in the state, along with their families, educators, and school leaders. We do this through resources, guidance, assistance to districts, charters, and tribal contract schools, and assistance to American Indian parent advisory committees, American Indian education constituents, tribal nations, the Tribal Nations Education Committee, and our entire agency as a whole. Under the Indian Education Act, which the legislature first passed in 1988, the office directly serves the 273 districts across the state that have more than 10 American Indian students in those districts and provides support to any district as requested. Next is our Office of General Counsel. This is an office that was created in about 2023. And it provides strategic legal counsel, services, and leadership to the department so that we as an agency can best accomplish our objectives and goals in service of ensuring that all students across the state access a great education. So this includes legal advice for the work across the agency, working directly with the Attorney General's office on litigation, where the AG's office represents MDE, but our General Counsel's office coordinates directly with them. This includes our data practices work, rulemaking activities, and our Office of General Counsel also includes MDE's Special Education Dispute Resolution Team, which handles special education complaints, mediation, and facilitating getting hearings through the Court of Administrative Hearings. Next is our Office of Inspector General. Again, we continue to be grateful to the legislature for partnering in creating and resourcing our OIG back in 2023, and it serves a really key role in our agency. Our OIG is responsible for detecting and helping to prevent fraud, waste, and abuse in our MDE programs by conducting independent investigations, recommending and imposing sanctions when that's appropriate, and collaborating with law enforcement and prosecutors on related criminal and civil infractions. Our OIG also includes MDE's student maltreatment team, which screens and investigates reports of alleged physical abuse, neglect, or sexual abuse of students in Minnesota's schools and charter schools. The program also assesses and investigates reports of alleged physical abuse, neglect, or sexual abuse of students that occur in Minnesota public schools and charter schools. Our OIG is a really key part of our fraud prevention work overall, and I would say that that work is truly embedded across our agency in a lot of different ways. We as an agency approach fraud prevention on a continuum of prevention, detection, investigation, action, and continuous improvement, and teams across our agency have roles in each of these places. We are continuously emphasizing, and our OIG, like our Inspector General, along with our General Counsel's office, have really played a key role in this, that it's truly every single person's responsibility at MDE to help prevent and detect fraud, waste, and abuse. And we help make sure that our folks understand and are equipped to do that through a variety of things. Agency-wide trainings that for all of our staff, embedded into all staff meetings. We also offer targeted trainings or connect specific specialized staff positions with targeted MMB trainings. We host a really robust Fraud Awareness Week every year in November. We are doing engaged in cross-division collaboration on fraud prevention. And there's also, we have established a really close partnership for our program areas with the program integrity legal experts that were funded through the governor's fraud prevention package last session to be able to make sure that our program areas know and understand and can fully utilize the regulatory tools available to them at every single stage and know that if, and this happens quite frequently, if a regulatory action that we take out of compliance concerns or to ensure that funds are being used appropriately is challenged on a legal basis, that our legal team, in partnership with, as needed, the AG's office, is there to defend that action and help make sure that our team has crossed the T's and dotted the I's so that we can sustain the action that we decided to take. We think about the action phase of our continuum really in two tracks. All of our program areas, whether it's grant administrators, our grants team and agency finance, are working hard every day to make sure that they understand and fully utilize all of the tools available to them. And we have our OIG that can investigate as needed. And with that, I will turn it over to our Assistant Commissioner, Dr. Macari Trino.
As Dr. Trainum and Dr. Cordy are getting into place, the next on deck for MDE, if you guys could be moving in that direction so we're ready to go at a little quicker pace, that would be great. Thank you, Dr. Trainum and Assistant Commissioner Cordy. I will turn it over to you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Dr. Macari Trainum, and thank you, Chairman and representatives. Very happy to be here today. My name is Dr. Macari Trainum. I am one of the four assistant commissioners at MDE. My office is the Office of Equity and Engagement. And my office oversees both the Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Center and the Public Engagement Division. Starting with the Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Center, I'd like to note our overall mission, which is to create the conditions for building authentic cross-cultural communities where harm is eliminated and every person's humanity is acknowledged and valued. Our work in the center, or the work of the center, is both internal and external to the agency. They provide equity, diversity, and inclusion, foundational and ongoing professional development to agency staff, as well as specialized professional development for leadership in partnership with human resources. They lead and manage affirmative action responsibilities, goals, and objectives. And they have a partnership with human resources that continues through the crafting and implementation of diversity and inclusion initiatives and activities. It's important to note that the center's work does not stop there, but is expansive, as they also are responsible for and manage all the work around safe and supportive schools and school climate and culture. From school mental health services and the statewide school nurse, achievement and integration and social emotional learning, to bullying prevention, crisis management, restorative practice, and non-exclusionary discipline, in addition to numerous grants. The center is focused on cultivating school environments where every student is seen in their full humanity and they thrive. Since October of 2025, we've provided, so just in this last quarter and coming into this new quarter, they've provided more than 120 trainings across the state to more than 3,800 educators and leaders. Some highlights that we've made, and I want to specifically point out our culturally responsive art education grant that is no longer funded through the federal government, but we're still doing work with it. We had a pilot school that we were working with specifically, where we had 84% of our K-3 students in this rural school that reported that in their visual art classroom that they felt comfortable at being themselves. While also more than 35% of those young people reported that they strongly agreed that they now saw themselves as artists, creators, and makers. And we've also seen that with one of our intermediate districts, they saw a 12% decrease in the number of students that are being secluded and or needing discipline. Public engagement, their mission is to foster an ongoing culture of family and community engagement at pre-K through 12 public education, and this is meant to empower diverse perspectives to shape and inform practices and policies. We believe that vibrant and resilient communities are the bedrock of an education system that is both accountable, just, and equipped with the necessary resources to provide students with a world-class educational experience. The division works to improve access to important information about public education, programs, policies, and services, support initiatives across the agency, and we build shared understanding and partnerships. They also manage a number of programs and grants that includes the Full Service Community Schools, the Non-Public Education Council, the Ombudsman, assisting families with student enrollment and re-enrollment when districts withdraw them, and multilingual supports, just to name a few. In this past year, they have taken more than 700 phone calls from families that range from wanting to know about enrollment to homeschool education to the metro surge, and responding to those more than 700 calls in timely manners within 24 hours.
Assistant Commissioner Cordy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Darren Cordy. I'm an Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Student Support Services at the Minnesota Department of Education. I'm here to talk about our Nutrition Program Services Division, our Special Education Division, and our Charter Center. We'll start with our Nutrition Program Services Division. This program administers a number of different school and community-based nutrition programs, some of which you're familiar with, some of which you may be new to you. We'll start with our school nutrition programs. These are probably ones that you're more familiar with. So the National School Lunch Program and School Breakfast Programs are some of the more popular programs that we have out in our schools today and that most of our schools participate in. Part of the school nutrition programs is also our after-school care program, which provides after-school meals and snacks for participating programs. Our agency also administers the somewhat new now Minnesota Free School Meals Program, which provides school lunches and breakfasts at no cost to all families, or I should say to all students, regardless of their family's free or reduced meal eligibility status. There's also the community nutrition programs, which provide payments for meals and snacks, which are served at child care centers, daycare homes, at-risk after-school child care centers, and emergency shelters. The community nutrition programs also provide cash reimbursements to sponsoring schools and nonprofit organizations that serve nutritious meals and snacks at sites, providing meals to children serving children 18 years in age and under when school is not in session. We also have a couple of milk programs that we administer. One is a federal program, the Special Milk Program, or SMK. And then we also have a state-specific milk program called the Minnesota Kindergarten Milk Program, which is also administered by MDE. We also have the Team Nutrition Grant, which is a federal grant which provides training and technical assistance to food service staff, nutrition education for children and caregivers, and school and community support for healthy eating and physical activity. And then lastly, we administer the Food Distribution Program, and this is a program by which we distribute USDA or U.S. Department of Agriculture commodity foods, so bulk foods, to Minnesota schools participating in the National School Lunch Program and or the Summer Food Service Program. Next, we'll move on to the Special Education Programs. I won't list these all individually because there's a lot there, but if you have questions, please let me know at the end. But the guiding principles of our special education program work is supporting the whole child and recognizing the uniqueness of each child, collaborating with our partners in the field and education organizations, and promoting and measuring evidence-based outcomes. We offer a number of different types of services, such as providing training, information, resources, policy development, and technical assistance to districts and charter schools, as well as other stakeholders, partners, through a variety of projects, initiatives, and grants. We also help with local planning and service delivery, program implementation, program evaluation, problem solving, and centering positive outcomes for students with disabilities. One of the focuses of our program is around making sure that students are being taught in the least restrictive environment, or also known as the most integrated settings, and that students are on track for graduation and secondary transition and learning with equity and equitable outcomes. And then lastly, just on that slide, wanted to just point out the special education program monitoring. That's kind of a front-end preventative compliance monitoring process that we do to ensure compliance and continuous improvement in implementation of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. We also offer online training opportunities and helping schools navigate individualized education program goals and objectives, progress reporting, and prior written notices. And then lastly for me, we have our Charter Center, which is a small but mighty team which provides leadership, support, training, and technical assistance and resources to promote high-quality charter schools and authorizer excellence in Minnesota's charter schools sector. They conduct evaluation and approval processes, provide consultation, training and technical assistance, and develop resources to foster a strong state chartering environment. Our team also manages the Federal Charter Schools Program Grant, which is currently funded at $13.4 million over 5 years to help increase the number of high-quality charter schools in the state. And that completes my presentation.
Thank you, Dr. Tranum and Assistant Commissioner Cordy. Very efficient transition, I might add. Nice job. So, Assistant Commissioner Burnham, I believe you're up next, so we'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Chair, committee members. I have the Office of Teaching and Learning, and my name is Bobby Burnham, and I serve as Assistant Commissioner. I have in the Office of Teaching and Learning early education, academic standards, instruction, and assessment, state library services, and expanded learning opportunities in the MDE Literacy Unit. The goals of our early education division is to expand high quality inclusive learning opportunities. And now we are partnering within the Compass system to provide support regionally for both early childhood special ed and early education to support better collaboration and consistency. Through this, we'll strengthen alignment of instruction, assessment, and curriculum across pre-K through third grade, strengthen guidance and implement best practices for dual language learners in intentional family and community engagement, promote strategies to ensure the state has a highly skilled early childhood workforce, and use data to ensure equitable policy, planning, practice, and professional development. And of course, we remain close partners with our colleagues from Department of Children, Youth, and Families in the integration and collaboration of the programs there as well. The Division of Academic Standards and Assessment or Instruction and Assessment provides content area expertise and support for K-12 schools throughout Minnesota, guiding, developing, and implementing the academic standards, the outcomes for all students, promoting high-quality instructional practices, as well as collaborating with professional organizations, districts, and charter schools. Staff in this division lead comprehensive and collaborative efforts to review, revise, and implement the state's high academic standards in arts, science, English language arts, social studies, math, health, and physical education. Staff provide training, professional guidance, and assistance to help teachers across the state unpack and implement the standards and improve classroom instruction. These efforts have included creating and utilizing a series of PD on demand through Canvas Learning Management System, as well as partnering with the Compass team to ensure alignment and consistency across the system for professional learning. Our State Library Services and Expanded Learning Opportunities Division. Our State Library Services partners with both public and school libraries to achieve equity and excellence in our collective work for Minnesotans. The State Library Services team also administers federal grants, state aid, and state grant programs that benefit all types of libraries, as well as manages and houses the Minnesota Braille and Talking Book Library. Our Expanded Learning Opportunities team, while the Minnesota Department of Education does not provide direct programming, we work diligently with local schools and community organizations to have quality out-of-school time learning opportunities available across Minnesota. Some of those programs include the Federal 21st Century Community Learning Grant, as well as the State After School Community Learning Grant Program. And the Literacy Unit, of course, is charged with the implementation of the READ Act. We have several components in the READ Act. The first one and the core to the work of the READ Act is the Regional Literacy Network. This network is composed of 9 literacy leads and 20 literacy coaches who are located across each of the 9 Minnesota service cooperatives. And the Regional Literacy Network provides support in 3 key areas: planning, through assisting districts and charters in creating and implementing their local literacy plan, addressing all requirements included in the READ Act; Implementation, we provide monthly training and coaching to district and charter literacy leads, administrators, teachers, and staff on implementing effective evidence-based literacy practices, and specifically centered on structured literacy and within the multi-tiered systems of support framework. We also work with schools in the component of evaluation, support districts and charters in tracking the success of their local literacy plan implementation, and make recommendations for continuous improvement. In the full year of operation, which was July 24 to July 25, the Regional Literacy Network and coaches provided over almost 46,000 hours of professional development, coaching, consultation, and implementation support, with over 90% of the districts and charter schools engaging with the Regional Literacy Network this past year. These efforts represent a foundational investment in workforce development, instructional capacity, and sustainability of the professional development required in the READ Act. Thank you.
Go ahead, Assistant Commissioner Mansfield.
Thank you, Chair and members. The Office of Educational Opportunity brings together the five divisions that you have in your materials and on the screen, and that expand access, readiness, and outcome for Minnesota learners. Working together, they form a coherent statewide strategy focused on ensuring students have equitable access to effective educators, rigorous academic and career pathways, and high-quality data systems that guide improvement. This structure allows us to align program implementation, workforce initiatives, and data-informed decision-making so that districts, charter schools, and tribally controlled schools can better support student success. In short, the Office of Educational Opportunity integrates programs, people, and data into one coordinated effort to advance equitable opportunities and outcomes across the state. The Student Access and Opportunities Division serves as a hub for multilingual learner education and major state and federal programs that support Minnesota's most underserved students. The division leads key state initiatives such as LEAPS, Multilingual Learner Education, and World Language Programs. It also oversees the federal elementary and secondary education act programs, including the titles that you see on the page, and the McKinney-Vento subgrants. Additionally, the division manages ESSA accountability and reporting, ensuring local education agencies receive the guidance and technical assistance needed to meet federal requirements and strengthen education outcomes. Through this work, the division helps districts and charter schools improve services for English learners and students who have historically faced educational barriers. The Career and College Success Division connects Minnesota's K-12 system to post-secondary and workforce opportunities by coordinating a broad range of academic and career-focused programs. It oversees programs including career and technical education, the statewide career pathway framework, and work-based learning, dual credit options like PSEO and concurrent enrollment, alternative learning programs, and extended time programming, supplemental online learning, and the Minnesota Career Informational Systems. One, on the adult educational side, the division distributes state and federal funding for adult literacy, adult secondary credentials such as GED and HISET, and adult career pathway programming. Together, these efforts help learners of all ages build the skills, credentials, and experiences needed for college, career, and lifelong success. The Educator Workforce and Development Center focuses on strengthening, expanding, and diversifying Minnesota's educator workforce. Its work includes addressing teacher shortages across regions and licensure areas, and supporting and retaining educators already serving Minnesota's students. A central priority is diversifying the workforce so it better reflects the racial and ethnic diversity of Minnesota's student population. To advance this work, the Center administers key initiatives you probably know, such as Grow Your Own, induction and mentoring work, and teacher apprenticeship, which all help recruit new educators, create non-traditional pathways, and support early career educators. The center also leads efforts to build culturally responsive learning and working environments across the states. And together, these strategies help ensure that students, especially students of color, indigenous students, and students from low-income families, have equitable access to experience in-field and effective educators. The Data Practices and Analytics Division ensures that Minnesota's education data is secure, ethical, and used consistently, across the agency. It leads statewide data strategy and governance, setting the standards, policy, and privacy protections needed for responsible data use. This division manages data system modernization, including the transition to real-time interoperable reporting systems like the EDFI Data Hub, which reduces reporting burdens for districts and improves data accuracy. Beyond system oversight, the division produces research, evaluation, and analytics that turn complex data into actionable insights. And this includes the Minnesota Student Survey, statewide longitudinal research, and evaluations of initiatives such as Compass, which I'll get to next, the READ Act, and the Kindergarten Fall Assessment. And finally, Compass, collaborative Minnesota partnerships to achieve students or advance student success. Compass is Minnesota's statewide system of support that helps districts, charter schools, and tribally controlled schools implement and sustain the Minnesota MTSS framework. It provides consistent professional learning and technical assistance across the state through a strong partnership between MDE and the Minnesota service cooperatives. Compass uses clearly defined content pathways embedded within the Minnesota MTSS and engages school teams through coordinated regional service delivery tailored to local needs and capacity. In addition to this implementation work, Compass also leads school improvement support and guidance for districts and schools identified under ESSA and under Minnesota's Comprehensive Achievement and Civic Readiness, or CACR, accountability system. Compass emphasizes that continuous improvement is not limited to schools identified for support, but rather is a core expectation of doing school within the MTSS framework, guiding all educators in strengthening instruction and systems over time. Compass also establishes baseline indicators for adult practices and student outcomes, allowing the state to track progress. Its purpose is to ensure every school system has access to coherent, culturally responsive, evidence-based supports so that each student can succeed. Thank you, Chair and members.
Thank you. As you get set, you can introduce yourself for the record and then just roll right in.
Wonderful. Thank you, co-chairs and committee members. My name is Patty Hand, and I'm the Chief Operating Officer for the Minnesota Department of Education. I have the privilege to work with six different divisions, and I will speak about a few of them during this piece of the presentation. I work with school finance, human resources, agency services, internal audit, advisory services division, and work very closely with MINUT at MDE division. I'm going to be very brief looking at the time, so I'll just touch on some main points. Our school finance division, under their responsibilities, I've made them here. Again, if you have further questions at the end, I'm happy to answer them. They administer the state's E-12 school finance system, including their aid payments. They support state policymakers, fiscal analysis and budget forecasts, and then the tax levy limitations. They also support our data and educational funding. Under our school and student data collection and our entitlements and levies, our financial management to local LEAs or local education agencies, which consists of our audits, our uniform financial accounting and report standards, which we call UFARS, and we support with technical assistance as well. We support our school facilities, pupil transportation, and our special education fiscal monitoring. I will move on. Our agency finance division has a few different big responsibilities with lots of work within our budget coordination development, which consists of our biennial, supplemental, annual, and capital budget, our financial accounting and reporting, which includes state and federal, our grant management administration, our federal funds management, and our accounting operations, which includes procurement and contracts, accounts payable and receivable, and our payroll. Our internal and audit and advisory services division, we work collaboratively with divisions across MDE to improve processes, manage risk, and promote best practices through education, advisory support, and independent assurance activities. This division is a trusted partner that empowers divisions with the knowledge, tools, and support needed to confidently manage risk, strengthen internal controls, and continuously improve. And our work includes internal controls assessments, risk management training, advisory support, internal audits, continuous improvement, and supporting best practices. At this time, we are working with a consultant with this division as well, as we solidified our framework for this division, so we're excited about that work. We work very closely in our partnership with Minute, which strengthens our strategies through collaborative problem solving, responsive technology support, and innovative solutions that advance our shared mission to serve our Minnesota learners. We are right now really exciting. We are working to build an IT governance approach to ensure that our teams work together for prioritization of our IT efforts that support and sustain our shared strategies of the departments. And then I've also included just some of our technical strategy activities, such as our Azure project, PC lifecycle management, and other projects as well. This is an overview of our MDE budget with the different types of funding that MDE receives. We know there's a specific interest in these different buckets of funding and wanted to share this categorical overview. We're again happy to answer questions at the end. Again, our budget consists of aid, which are direct financial support to districts, charters, intermediates, cooperatives, tribal contract schools, and our libraries, our grants, which are competitive and named grants, and then our operations, contracts, and other pass-throughs. These include direct approach appropriations and riders that fund MDE's responsibilities and may involve passing funds along to other partners, our contracts with community organizations and funding for events, supporting students and our educators, our salaries and benefits at MDE, building rent, and our information technology. MDE operations. In 24-25, MDE state funded operating expenditures averaged about $42 million per year. Our annual totals will increase about 2% this biennium, due to last session's operating adjustment and other change items. We will expend a similar amount of its federal appropriations for staffing and other operations, and we have budget of about $1.8 million specifically to administer state-funded grants appropriated in FY26. This funding will support the work of grant specialists, program experts, and our grants management software. We expect to receive about $212,500 in private grants and $56,000 in gifts in FY26, and we currently employ 484 FTEs, 225 of whom are state funded. Thank you.
Well done. Thank you very much to the department, to the assistant commissioners, to Commissioner Jett for your presentation. Before we go into member discussion, we've got about 10 minutes for that. I just want to do a few high-level takeaways from my perspective. So in our materials that Ms. Beckel went through and then within the agencies, we found that the annual payroll is about $53 million for the department. And then based off of the July 1, 2025 employee list, there were about 480 FTEs or full-time employees with an active payroll about $50.4 million, and then based on January 1st of 2026 employee list, the department had 476.2 FTEs with a payroll that grew a little bit to 50.8 million. So based on the information from the department additionally, looks like you guys are hiring up to 40 positions, 31 of which have a combined salary of about $3.2 million. So those are currently, from my understanding, open positions. So we've heard about the negative impact about the federal decisions to reorganize the Federal Department of Education. Despite this, on January 1st, MDE had 165 FTEs fully funded by federal dollars and is currently looking to hire 8 more. So it is safe to say that the agency is well-funded. Some might say that it's overfunded and an opportunity to look for dollars. I don't say that to be critical of the commissioner. He's somewhere over there. We had a great visit when he came out to my school district that I serve in. But as a school principal, or Representative Hill, as somewhere around here as a teacher, if you give me a dollar or you give our school district a dollar, we're going to figure out a way to spend it to serve kids. I will gladly find a way to spend it to serve our kids and our communities. But frankly, it's not the reality that our schools are facing right now. We are forced to live within our means and in school districts. And while the MDE continues to be fully funded, and it is extremely frustrating when we are told how to spend dollars, we don't have local control, the funding and flexibility, and it's frustrating to see the agency continue to grow. So with that, I would just challenge us as we move forward that we're going to need to have to think creatively on how we address the challenges facing our schools. So with that, I will go into member discussion. Representative DePell, you're first on the list.
Thank you, Chair Bakeberg. I had a couple questions pertaining to some things that have been on the top of mind of many individuals, and that is attendance and student psychological and mental health. And I wanted to ask, I apologize if I'm pronouncing it wrong, Dr. Trainham, I believe. Trainham. There we go. Just let it roll off the tongue. Thank you, ma'am. A question that I had was you had talked about DEI, and I think overarchingly you briefly described the philosophy that every student is seen for their full humanity, and I was just wondering if you could expound more on that in greater detail. What does that mean? How does that get put into action?
Sure. Thank you for the question, Representative.
It's DePell.
Okay.
There we go.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. So what I would say is part of the way that that is lived out and the way that that works when we're thinking about classrooms or we're thinking about a school building is that students show up as, take myself, I walk into the building, I am acknowledged. Minimally, I'm acknowledged, right? Hello, hi, Macari, so forth. The next piece would be, does curriculum reflect my lived experience? Does it reflect what I look like? Does it reflect my community that I'm part of? And are we making connections between what it is that we're learning and then what that looks like when I walk out of the building and into my community? When those things are happening, when students feel like they are connected to adults in the building, when they believe that they're being seen for who they are, that they're being asked about, their lives, they're being asked about their interest. Those things are also part of the way that we design curriculum and we design instruction. It allows for students to know that they have a place that they belong. And as a result of that, achievement is increased as a result of that.
I appreciate that answer. A follow-up to that, Chair Bakeberg, if you don't mind. I was curious, so growing up and when I went to junior high and high school, I was kind of a bad kid. I drank a lot, partied a lot, did a lot of drugs, and didn't really have a lot of direction. I had kind of a wild experience in school, and we had some of that available to us, but usually I was just generally confused of my purpose in life. Why am I here? What is the point of life? And I hear that from a lot of students now today. What is the point in life? Why am I here? And oftentimes I see students trying to look for purpose inside of themselves instead of outside of themselves. And it seems like depression rates continue to rise, suicide rates continue to rise. And I was looking back on that, you know, I had a very kind of fatalistic viewpoint when I was in school. I had a lot of friends that had those same viewpoints too. Many friends that were just atheists, they didn't think there was really any meaning. Let's just try to have as much fun and do whatever makes us feel good. You know, that was really kind of the mantra. And so I kind of reflected back on that, and I realized that, you know, I was looking at our state constitution mentions God. Every other state constitution in America mentions God also. The United States Constitution mentions God, and I remember growing up in school, and I'm not saying we should have religion class, we should have things like that taught on a public school level. But are those things that are those things acknowledged that our United States Constitution and that our state constitution acknowledge something outside of us? That, you know, maybe somebody's looking for something more than just inside of them.
So can you reframe your question? I'm wondering, like, are you asking, does curriculum reflect theology?
Right. Not theology, no. Does curriculum reference our founding documents in our state and our federal government in a way that doesn't exclude the meaning in which those individuals derived?
Dr. Trainum.
Chair Rickberg, when I'm listening to the question, I'm thinking to myself that the person who is, as you're looking at the clock, the person who's most equipped to answer that question from an MDE perspective is our Assistant Commissioner Bobby Burnham. And so if Bobby, if you don't mind running up here real quick and getting on your skates, because she handles our curriculum instruction, if that's okay.
You can do a quick line change. That
Correct.
Sounds good. Assistant Commissioner, thank you for coming. If you could briefly answer, we have two more people on the list. So.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Committee members, our social studies standards, as you know, just went through a revision, and I don't exactly have those memorized, but I am happy to go back and see if we can find some references to respond to your question.
Thank you. Chair Bakebury, I could just really quick follow up, very quickly.
We need to move on. Representative DePrell, if we could take this conversation offline. So I apologize. Representative Ingen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the overview. I'm looking here at your list of employees. I see the word grant listed 21 times, 21 different employees. Audit is listed 9 times. OIG in some capacity or some form of an employee is listed twice, and same with monitor, it's listed twice. It's probably some that I've left out, but it's a sizable chunk of your guys' budget and your salaried positions. So can you give me a little bit of context as to why we have so many grant employees and what it is that they're doing on a day-to-day basis and how that coincides with the auditors and the OIGs and the monitors that are trying to track compliance? And then give me a success story, just one of it working.
Chairs, members, and so one of the things I want to just emphasize is that we actively monitor and prioritize on our hiring criteria and roles, and so we brought Sean up here to go into those questions that you have in a little bit more detail.
Co-chairs, my name is Sean Fonhorst, and I'm the Director of Agency Finance at MDE. I oversee the team of grant specialists that we employ that I think includes many of the positions that were mentioned in the question. So the way we handle grants at MDE, it's a big part of our mission and the way we, you know, support students and educators in the state. There are rigorous standards both at the state and federal level for grants administration, and everywhere from risk assessment, the selection of, you know, competitive grantees, and then sort of follow-up evaluation after the grant occurs. Those are all laid out in detail with the Office of Grants Management. We follow those, you know, to the T, those requirements, which tends to take quite a bit of staff time, but it does lead to the best outcome overall in that we are, you know, assured that our grants are getting out in a timely manner and being spent in the most effective possible way once they are granted out to schools and other institutions.
Thank you.
A positive example? Sure. I think we've had, I'm thinking of like the federal program, we have this Capital Projects Fund that's a federal level program going on right now where we have we've had a lot of success supporting external partners in building spaces with sort of, you know, strong educational outcomes. And I think that's in given the rigorous federal standards around those those awards, the type of review we have to do with like building plans and like ensuring that financing is completely lined up. We only pay a portion of the building costs. I consider that a success. We've really had a lot of good projects come out of that, and I can follow up with specifics if that would be helpful, of like a sampling of that, but I consider that a success.
Thank you very much. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair. And this question, very briefly, is for Assistant Commissioner Mansfield. So one of the things that I am very focused on is trying to make sure that our departments, our agencies are speaking to one another, especially with education being the whole child. I have a bill that currently is asking agencies to work together to look at student career pathways. So as you are talking about Office of Education Opportunity, Education Workforce, all of the career and technical pathways, all those things, are you guys actively speaking to DEED and DLI to make sure that we are creating something that is accessible to all students and actually is something that's preparing kiddos for what employers are looking for? And that will be my last question, Mr. Chair.
Assistant Commissioner Mansfield.
Thank you, Chair. Rep. Mueller, we do have really good, strong partners. I think a great example of an answer to your question. In apprenticeship work, we have a partnership with Department of Labor and Industry where they have written a grant out of their apprenticeship. That, there you go. and that's funding a staff member at in our Educator Workforce and Development Center that helps ease the translation between DLI and us. We also have worked together with DEED and Career and College Success for a bill that passed last session. I can't remember the name of it, but we're working right now on implementation to help with data that exists in Career and College Success and kind of merging that data into work that exists over at DEED. So that we can better understand each other in student pathways into adult pathways and see what policies we can work on together to kind of blend those pathways together, adult to student to adult. So it's something that I find makes sense in my head also. And so I think also the other thing that we're working hard in OEO, my office, is to our systems make sense, and so to work together across our divisions so that we can also work together to expand agency to agency.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. Chair Joachim.
Oh, thank you, Chair Bakeberg. I just want to thank you for having the overview of MDE. As you can see, they have pretty comprehensive team that's working on a lot of things. And I know there is some concern about FTEs, and I'm sure we'll get into those discussions later. But just as a reminder, MDE covers 331 districts, 880,000 students, and then also oversees charter schools, which is like another 80,000 students, if I can remember. So there is a lot of work there to be done. And I just want to thank you for trying to work very closely with our school districts and answering questions, especially in the time we've had over the last 2 months when there was a lot of questions. And then also, just as a reminder too, the majority of our school formula is actually on the per pupil formula and the average daily membership, which is completely flexible for school districts to do what they want with it. So I know there is some concerns about districts not having local control, but we are a very heavy local control state, which can be good and bad depending on how you look at it. So thank you again for having this overview so that we could, I like the flow chart too. I've been wanting one for a while, so thank you.
Thank you, members. Thank you again to the department. And as we transition, I'm sure Perpich is just chomping at the bit too, so if you could transition up. But thank you very much for a good discussion to members and to the department. So members, next on the agenda will be a presentation and discussion for Perpich Center on the Arts. While the Perpich, just as a reminder, members, while the Perpich Center gets situated I want to remind you that unlike the presentation we just had around our traditional schools, the Purpich Center is funded like a state agency and is not funded based on enrollment. Also in your folders, you have information provided by the Purpich Center and to our testifiers. I see you have many, many slides in there. So I'm going to really encourage you. I want to give you latitude to present what you need to, but it's going to need to be the high points. We can read the slides, so make sure you're giving us the high points. With that, I invite our testifiers to introduce themselves for the record and begin their presentation. Afterward, we will have a member discussion. Just as a reminder, please introduce yourself for the record, and whoever's going first can do that and proceed.
Good afternoon. I'm Allegra Smishak, Executive Director of Purpich Center for Arts Education.
Good afternoon. John Tope, the Finance Director at Purpich Center.
Hi, I'm Betsy Anderson, Communications Director.
Go ahead. Thank
you, Co-Chair Bakeberg and Co-Chair Joachim, for the invitation to be here today. It feels very auspicious, given that it's Arts Advocacy Day and Youth Day at the Capitol. We have board members attending Arts Advocacy Day, and we have our students here for Youth Day at the Capitol. I've had the honor of serving as Executive Director for Purpich Center for Arts Education for about 18 months now. But I bring about 20 years of experience in public education in both Metro and Greater Minnesota. The focus of my career has really been improving teaching and learning and improving school culture. And when I got to Purpich, it was a bit of a shock because Purpich is already exceptional in both. So I would say not only is it the best I've ever seen in terms of teaching and learning and culture, it's better than I could have possibly imagined. Our mission is to provide all Minnesota students the opportunity to develop, enhance, and integrate their artistic and academic abilities to their highest potential. So given that we already have such exceptional programming, as we did our strategic planning for the year and thinking about our strategic directions, we wanted to continue to have that focus on artistic and academic excellence and a culture of belonging. But we, more importantly, wanted to cultivate connections and boldly tell our story about the amazing work that's currently happening and to optimize systems to support a thriving, future-ready state agency. And I'll speak a little bit more to those later. One of the things we wanted to celebrate with you all this year is our nation's 250th year. It's the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And Purpich was absolutely honored to be contacted by the National Scroll-a-thon. They are working with all 50 states and 5 territories to put in a community installation in Washington, D.C., celebrating this historic event. And Purpich was selected to represent Minnesota. That's both because of our reputation nationally and also because our students at our arts high school truly represent the state. So if any of you are going to be in DC later this spring or summer, please let me know. I'd be happy to get you the information so you could see our artwork on display. Another reason we were selected is because of our long legacy. This year we celebrated our 40th year, and we did invite you all to join us in September, along with alumni and students, families, and greater community. And it was a really special day to see multi-generations of Purpich alumni and staff come together and support the place that had given them so much. Very briefly, a little Purpich 101 for those of you who are new or a review for others. Purpich is a state agency, as Chair Bakeberg mentioned. We are very unique in that we have a public school as part of our agency, so we do report to MDE, and we follow the Minnesota School Board Association policies. Since we are a state agency, we also report to the governor, and we are beholden to MMB policies as well. So when we're policymaking for Purpich, we really kind of combine both insights and make sure that we're compliant in all areas. Purpose Center for Arts Education has three primary branches to our agency. Most of you are familiar with the Arts High School, which is for 11th and 12th grade students from across the state, located in Golden Valley. That is just one branch of the work we do. We also have a statewide resource library that is open to anyone over the age of 18 in the state of Minnesota. We frequently send things via interlibrary loans so that we can truly reach all corners of the state. And perhaps most impactful statewide is our professional development and resource programs. If you hear me refer to PDR in the presentation, I'm referring to this branch of our agency. Each year we submit an annual report to your committee leadership, and this year they received it as well on January 15th. We tried to make it a little, like, increase the readability a bit, so all of you should have a copy of that with you right now. I will refer to specific pages just so you can kind of see how that's laid out. On page 4 of the report, you'll see this table detailing PDR's impact over the past 3 years. Last year alone, PDR hosted 313 events for nearly 2,000 educators across the state. Naturally, most of those were arts educators, but you'll see we also interact with a lot of non-arts educators. Many of those are Phi-Ed teachers because many school districts can't fund their own dance courses during the school day, so the dance standards are incorporated into PE, and our dance specialist is particularly skilled at getting Phi-Ed teachers to dance. I would highly recommend you attend one of those trainings sometime in your area. PDR also provides many free relicensure trainings on supporting multilingual students, students with special needs, etc. So that's why we have such a wide range. This map is a visual representation of our impact last year. 275 districts and charter schools were served by Purpose directly. So mind you, this is not a map of our impact over the past 40 years. This is 1 year alone. I know each of you do more than serve the state as a whole. You're also beholden to your individual constituents who you were elected to represent. So I'll come back to the previous slide. In the packet that we provided for you, please take a moment and find your Senate district's one-pager. We have created one-pagers for every Senate district in the state, all 67, detailing what your constituents, your educators, participated in Purpose over the past 2 years. So on the screen, I provided Senate District 10 as an example. You can see that in 23-24, we worked with 38 educators in that district, and 24-20-25, 60. We have detailed the things we did specifically with that district, which usually is our staff traveling to your school district and working with your teachers in that space. We also offer many statewide workshops. Some are virtual, some are in person, that are available to all teachers in the state. If anybody can't find theirs, we also brought extra copies with your names on them, so we're happy to pass those out. So given that our current appropriation is $8.6 million, and over 75% of Minnesota public school students were impacted last year alone, I want to emphasize that our resources at Purpose, including the Arts High School, are available to all public school students in Minnesota, and we are currently serving most. So our current per pupil dollar amount is $10.16. And I'd argue that Purpose has the best return on investment in public education in the state. On page 6 and 7 of our annual report, we've also compiled the impact on every Senate district on two pages. So if you'd like to compare the impact of our professional development and resource programs against other legislative districts in your area or across the state, we have that for you. The highlighted in green shows the growth over the past few years. So So our data and our lived experience is that your arts educators, your arts teachers, your music teachers, they know us, they depend on us, they tell us they love what we do. But that reputation doesn't necessarily trickle up to school boards and superintendents. And unfortunately for us, school board members and superintendents have a lot more access to folks like yourselves than most arts and music teachers. So a primary focus of my storytelling efforts this year was to inform educational leaders about what we're currently doing for them. Our services are no cost to districts, so I don't really need to sell Purpich. Purpich sells itself. I just want them to know what we are currently doing for them and that we could be doing more if they want us to. So, of course, we've always presented at arts-focused conferences, but this year we really wanted to focus on those ed leadership conferences. AMSD in September is the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and their membership is comprised of Metro superintendents and school board members. MREA is the Minnesota Rural Education Association, which is made up of Greater Minnesota educational leaders. MSBA is the Minnesota School Board Association, which is comprised of the statewide organization of superintendents and school board members. And finally, MASA is the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, which is a statewide agency for superintendents and central office leaders. When we were invited to present at the AMSD meeting, I created a spreadsheet that shared similar information to what you see on your one pager for your Senate district. How many teachers in your school district worked with Purpich over the past 2 years? What did they do? How did we serve them? But then I added a second tab to show enrollment at the arts high school. I know that many districts are experiencing declining enrollment right now. I've worked for several that have as well. It is painful and it is real. And it was important to me to communicate to AMSD members exactly what our impact is on their enrollment. So of the 52 member districts, currently at Hopkins, we have 103 students attending Purpich. So roughly 2 students per district in the metro. However, that's students that live within the school district. If you look at the students that were attending high school from that public school district before they came to Purpich, it was only 46 of 52 districts, so less than 1 student per district. And that's because a lot of our students come to Purpich because they weren't successful in traditional schools. So prior to coming, they were in charter schools, they were homeschooled, they were getting online school opportunities. So I would never say that losing a student enrollment to another school has no impact, but the impact when compared to the benefits of our PDR program are minimal. The superintendents of St. Cloud and Duluth co-presented with us at the AMSD conference in the fall. They shared about their experiences in our comprehensive arts program, planning program, excuse me. And while they talked about the impact of Purpich's work on their districts, they were moved to tears. And that was extremely humbling. And I was very grateful that they shared about their experience so that we could encourage other districts to participate. I know Hopkins was in our last cohort, Little Falls is in our current cohort, Red Wing has expressed interest in joining our cohort next year. Of course there's an Adobe error. This map does represent 40 years. These are the cohorts that have participated in our CAP planning program. It's a 2-year cohort. So over the past 40 years, we have worked with 206 districts specifically. This is a competitive opportunity. So this year we have 9 districts from different parts of the state. Usually we have like 8 to 10. But an exciting year for that program. Hmm. There we go. At every presentation we do, we really encourage folks to also utilize our statewide resource library. These collections often have professional books that are really expensive for teachers to purchase on their own. They don't exist in their school library. They're usually available at university libraries, and teachers don't necessarily have access to those resources. So Purpich is a wonderful resource for those professional materials. We also have a robust collection of children's books, and one of my favorite examples, we did a training with District 191 in Burnsville, And it was a collaboration of our resource library, our professional development and resource program team, and their American Indian Education director. And we put on just a really impactful interdisciplinary training for their elementary specialists. From our Native Authors and Artists series, we have a compilation of videos that we received permission to use. So that was our presentation at MREA this year. I also had the opportunity to conduct mock interviews with Greater Minnesota student teachers, which was a delight to see their passion. Excuse me. And at that conference, I met a Greater Minnesota activities director who spoke to the fact that his background was in athletics, and he really struggled to provide support for their arts education programs in the way that he hoped. So one of the things that we're looking at doing in the coming year is really reaching out to the Minnesota State High School League and activities directors to see how we can better support folks who come to that role in an athletics background and would like to be more supportive of their arts programming. At the MSBA conference in January, I don't know the arts equivalent, so I said we did a full court press at that event since it's a statewide audience. We had our exhibit. At the exhibit hall, there is our Dr. Wendy Barden speaking to Lake City Superintendent Ariana Wright. Our arts high school was showcased in the School Excellence Showcase. In that image at the bottom, we have our math teacher and our visual arts teacher. They really focused on presenting the work that they do that's interdisciplinary that could be replicated anywhere. You don't need to have a special arts program to do it. So that was very popular at the event. And then finally, we had our soon-to-be-published white paper on chronic absenteeism and the impact of arts education. So just a snippet from that, because I know, Representative Vaitberg, you've done a lot of work in that area as well. We were inspired by the legislative study, and we noticed that arts education was not a specific strategy that was studied in that pilot that you all supported. We worked with the 2021 attendance data, and our team found a significant correlation between the number of arts areas offered and the impact on student attendance. We are now going to look at other attendance data and see if that significant impact continues across different years. And just one other thing that came out of that study that I wanted to share with you. Of the 134 high schools that we looked at, we found this ratio in high school electives. So dance is very rarely offered during the school day. In this chart, if you draw your attention to the sun, you can see it's really only offered when schools offer all five arts areas. However, thanks to the Arts Education Data Project that we're part of a collaboration of, we can tell you specifically which students take which arts classes. On this screen, the zero line, anything below it shows underrepresentation in that arts area, and anything above it is overrepresentation by race. To summarize, dance is the only arts area that every demographic of students of color measured are overrepresented, and in most cases, considerably so. This is an area that we hope to dive into more next year.
Just as you take a drink there, I know you have quite a few slides left, so, and we want to leave time for member discussion.
Okay. So. This Reflective Artist Award is a statewide award. It launched last year. We are excited to celebrate Phoebe Meyer from East Central High School. This is a statewide recognition. Our Arts High School, as mentioned, is located in Golden Valley, serves 11th and 12th grade students. When I first came to Purpich, I thought it was kind of strange that we didn't have more enrollment from the metro area. So I placed all the art schools that are in the state of Minnesota on a Google map, and you can see them here. When you zoom out in the map, you'll notice that there's there are no options in greater Minnesota. That's why nearly 7 out of 10 students rely on the residential model that we have at Purpich. Without it, rural and greater Minnesotan students would not have access to an arts-focused education. Some of the demographics of our statewide representation, just to stress, Purpich is not a metro arts school. It is a statewide public access model. Our students represent 26 counties, 72 cities, from 51 school districts. All 8 congressional districts are represented, and you can see some additional details there about where they come from. This past year, Purpich was nationally recognized as an Arts Schools Network Exemplary School in recognition of outstanding efforts in strategically evaluating our purpose, operations, plans, and educational programs. This designation lasts for 5 years, and in your annual report packets, if you go to pages 8 through 11, you'll notice that Purpich has a 100% graduation rate. Our average ACT score is well above the state average. We've also seen a significant increase in the number of students taking the AP exam. So in all of these measures, Purpich Arts High School and its students are extraordinary. Because our students come from across the state, they care about the state. These are just 2 recent examples of our students this year partnering with the City of Golden Valley to put on a climate equity event. And our students also supported the Annunciation community for the Fletcher Fest, and were able to provide some art therapy lessons for children attending that event. Our literary arts students last year said they didn't have enough experiences and opportunities to publish their work in their high schools where they came from. So they wanted to create a literary arts magazine for the state of Minnesota. We had over 70 submissions. The students evaluated them and submitted and published writing from all of these high schools around the state. And in regards to Representative Mueller's bill and what I viewed of it on the Mueller Minute, we are very much aligned in the desire to have real-world access and rigorous, relevant experiences. In fact, that's an area where we have a lot of strengths. So our College and Career Day brings approximately 30 colleges and universities together. It's not a college fair. It's a structured, career-aligned, post-secondary pathway exposure. Industry expectations are reviewed and professional networks are built. So I don't think we're specifically named in your bill, Representative Mueller, but we would be very excited to be included if it were to advance and partner with you.
Executive Director Spieszek, if you could wrap it up, we'll give you 5 minutes to wrap up.
Thank you for that specific timeline. I'll briefly say we have very strong advisory programs for belonging and mental health that are student-led. Our campus and our Arts High School building in particular serves as an event host to many organizations that serve students and young people and old people throughout the state. We are not perfect. We've identified 2 priority areas for growth. The first is increasing enrollment at the Arts High School and also streamlining administrative processes and procedures. The first is quite technical with the procedures. I'd be happy to go into more depth if there are any questions there. But I really wanted to speak on our enrollment. So in this slide, you can see our enrollment since 2018 to today. It's gone up slightly. It's gone down slightly. One thing we want to really celebrate is the increase in our student diversity to be much more representative of the state. So from 2023 with 14%, BIPOC students, we currently have nearly doubled that with 27%. One of the strategies we've implemented is really targeted board member recruitment. When I joined, we had 10 board members. We have 4 remaining. One's our ex officio member. One is Sally Grants Korsch, and our other 2 members are all very involved in leadership. However, in the past year, we've added 12 board members who represent all congressional districts. We are more racially diverse and geographically diverse, and each of these individuals brings amazing skills and networks that we believe will support us in our enrollment efforts. We've also launched an enrollment ad hoc committee where we are strategically using implementation science to advance. We have doubled our summer camp offerings, and we will also be hosting a youth group over the course of the summer in our facilities. Purpose Center for Arts Education is fully funded by the state legislature. With just a little sliver of other examples, we are very grateful to your support. We want to remind you that we have no taxation authority, so that means all of the following: that we do not receive any of those funds currently. We receive no state aid besides our general appropriation, and we receive no federal title funding. I want to reemphasize that Purpose is an incredible value for all the ways that it impacts all public school students across the state, not only those that attend our arts high school, and that the arts and culture sector is an incredible engine for economic growth. We're not only enriching minds, we are also enriching our communities and our GDP. I will close that and I'm open to your questions.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Before we go to member discussions, I just want to, just a few points of clarity, just to be very transparent. One of my nieces went to an arts school, not in Minnesota. They don't live in Minnesota, but so the value of it is obviously important to kids. Hers was within one of the local high schools. It was an academy of one of the local high schools. So, but to begin, I just want to be honest and how the funding and value proposition, to be very frank, is not $10.16 from my perspective. With an annual fund of about $8.6 million in state funds, enrollment at 136 students, that goes out to about $63,000 per pupil per year. I mean, that's the reality. To put that in context, the statewide average for school districts, and we had a couple of school districts here earlier from Region 2, the statewide average for funding is about $17,000 per district. So we as a committee, as we're debating some really tough things that are facing our schools across the state, we could look at addressing some of that, a small portion of it, by cutting Purpose's funding in half to $4.3 million, and Purpose would still be receiving about $32,000 per student. That's about double what traditional high schools are getting. So underscoring in 129C.10, your statutory enrollment has a cap of 310, and one of your goals is to grow your enrollment. I think if we brought every school district, public, private, wherever they're at, that's their goal, is to grow their enrollment. So you're currently at 44% of your enrollment. And then over the last 8 years, the average enrollment has been around 141 students, which is about 45% of that cap. So I think there's some things that we have to have some honest conversations about how we're funding things and what we're doing, because the needs of our school districts and obviously the needs of Purpose, and you guys serve a group of students that are extremely important, but we're gonna have tough decisions to make. And how we are funding schools, we need to be having honest, frank conversations. So I just respectfully will disagree with $10.16 per pupil. So with that, I'm going to move into member questions. Did you have
I would like to respond.
You
thank
bet.
You. I agree that $63,000 per student would be ridiculous, and that is why it is also not an accurate assessment of the way our funding is appropriated. The Arts High School is only one part of the work we do, and I tried to emphasize in my presentation that our professional development and resource program, in serving 2,000 educators last year, is very significant. So while you may not see the $10.16, I think dividing our enrollment by our appropriation is also very misleading. So perhaps we could dig in more on our respective formulas.
You bet. And we could talk about professional development and effective ways to roll out PD to people across the state. We have a number of organizations that are doing a good job with that as well. One thing, the list that you had, I didn't see principals, the principals associations on there, and I didn't see Education Minnesota, so reaching out to those groups as well.
Absolutely.
So with that, we'll go to Chair Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a question, and if I could have a short follow-up to it. But what you mentioned that Purpich has the, I can't remember how you stated it, but the best return on investments of something. I can't remember how that went. But could you please explain how you measure return on investment? Like what academic performances or attendance would be a good thing to measure? And I saw one slide where a school had arts or dance or something that you correlated, sure. But how do you measure that return on investment?
Okay. So Representative Bennett, if you would refer to the one pager for your district, did you receive a copy of that?
Go ahead. She said yes.
Okay. Fantastic. So within just your district, one of 67 Senate districts, you can see the number of educators we worked with last year and the offerings that were provided. I don't have yours in front of me, but I'm guessing that your teachers attended, let's say, a dozen of our offerings last year. You have direct quotes from your teachers at the bottom of that page on the impact of them individually. So that is just one of 67. Collectively serving 275 districts for an $8 million appropriation is an excellent return on investment. So of those 275 districts, we worked with over 75% of public school students in our offerings and impact through their educators, including administrators. We also worked with 100 administrators last year.
Chair Bennett.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that. And I'm not going to pick on Purpich specifically here because this is a legislative problem that we have. In measuring return on investment in education, we tend to measure our inputs. How many people are we touching? How many teachers do we have? How many programs do we have? That is not what we should be measuring for any of this. It should be measurable academic goals or attendance goals, which obviously affect academics. So I'm going to encourage you to measure that way. I get the various comments and things, and I'm not negating arts and music and dance because I think it's very important towards education and life. But we have to look at return on investment and how are we affecting reading? How are we affecting math? How are we affecting attendance? Set a goal and measure it, not how much we're inputting. I think it's wonderful how many people you're touching, but what's it actually doing? And I'm just going to encourage that. And for us as legislators, we forget that. As a teacher, I measure my outputs. How did, the academics or whatever my goal was, not my input. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And I look forward to sharing our white paper. I put up again our graph showing the impact or correlation, I should say, at this point between arts education and attendance. And I did mention our 100% graduation rate and our high ACT scores at Purpich as some examples of our objective measures.
Representative Sensenmura.
Thank you. So I know we've been talking about that Purpich's budget is around $8 million. Can you break down for us how much is going to the arts high school for 11th, 12th graders, and then how much of that goes to the professional development? Thank you.
Sure, Representative and Chair Bigberg. I do have a graph here that I did send to Executive Director Schmizik that does show a pie chart and has a percentage of expenses by area, And if she can retrieve that, then she may be able to show it to you on the screen. But before
we did
she
also include a budget sheet in your material.
As just before the record, could you just state your name for the record? And then just reminder, just let's go through the chair. And we've got about 5 minutes. So could you just, for the record, could you state your name?
Sure. John Tope, Finance Director at Perpich. Chair Begberg, I have provided a graph to Executive Director Smijic. She's putting it up on the board as far as the breakdown of expenditures by percentage in it's by department for Perpich Center.
Representative Sensenmura.
So, I'm sorry, it's very small. I can't see it. And we don't have a copy of that. And what I do have is, like, the budget, but that is not decipherable for me to understand how much is going to the Arts High School versus how much is going to the professional development, because I'm kind of hearing a back and forth, right, about, like, what is the return on investment per pupil, right? And so I think it'd be help us in this conversation to understand what is the budget of the Arts High School versus what is the budget of the professional development, all the other resources that Perpich provides. Thank you.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you very much. I just want to be very clear that, again, the math that we did just a minute ago, all due respect, was fairly disingenuous in that we're not just funding that a school. We're also funding other things as part of this mission. And so just want to be very crystal clear about that. But I actually wanted to speak to what Representative Bennett did. I will admit that very few people in this room probably know that I actually attended the Perpich Arts High School. In fact, I was one of its first students. And what was fascinating to me about the time that I spent there is the level of education and the level of integration between interdisciplines was incredible. I will be very candid with you. I did not love math. Did not. Never did. But we had the most fascinating class in which we studied the implications of the angles, the ratios, and all of the precise calculations between an M.C. Escher painting and how we correlated that into math. And I will tell you, as someone who found myself feeling very bored in many of my classes. I was smart. I got good grades. In fact, I was fortunate that one of my teachers realized that I was bored and put me in honors classes where I actually got better grades in honors classes. But I will tell you, in my time at Perpich, in having some of those classes, it was the first time in my entire life that I was in a math class and I was excited to be in math class. I mean, it was the most intriguing and interesting thing I've ever heard. And I will be very upfront with you, I was there for the dance program. But I loved it. It was really incredible the way in which the instructors were able to cross disciplines and put those pieces together was phenomenal. And it was really fascinating. And so I want to say, when we talk about the quality of the education that we're talking about in these programs, it was incredible. And I want to be clear that when we're talking about those outcomes, that we're taking that into account, that some of the things that we did at that school were nothing less than magical. And so I just want to say thank you for all of that hard work, and I know a lot has been done since then. But I just felt like now was a really good time to bring that forward. And talk about that experience, because it really was phenomenal. And your instructors were so incredibly passionate and just able to help students look at different subjects in a way that I have never experienced in my life. It was truly, truly phenomenal. So thank you for your work.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Representative Bonner. Thank you, members. I want to thank MDE and Perpich, Perpich Center, for being here today and giving us a lot to think about. One of the things that that I hear a lot from educators, from actual boots on the ground, you talk about relationships, you talk about rigor, and you talk about relevance. That's really what it's all about, to engage kids, to make sure that we're doing that. So far this session, we have heard the need for more student support personnel. I think we all can agree to that. We've heard concerns about compensatory revenue. We've heard concerns about increase in expanding school safety and student safety. And we've heard concerns about cuts to special ed that are on the horizon. We will continue to hear. We will continue to listen so that we can learn, so that we can prioritize our spending to address the needs facing all of our students across Minnesota. Members, that concludes our agenda for today. Our next meeting is Thursday, March 5th, 2026. Chair Youakim, did you want to give an overview of that meeting?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to thank Purpich for being here. You do work with every student across the state and teachers, and I think you have our high relevance, just to put that plug in. On Thursday, we will be talking about local optional revenue. School safety. I'm like jumping ahead. School safety levies, the student support personnel aid, as well as anonymous threat reporting. Thank you. I was already on to the next Thursday.
Thank you for your attention. Committee stands adjourned.